Well. Welcome back to another episode of the continuing saga of interviews. I, Tyler Byrne, have poets, publishers, artists, and the few intermingling random people who find themselves in the intersection between the internet and literature. Today, I'm talking to Oscar Dutoit. He has published The Island, the collage of haikus, of long haikus, The Shabby Dollhouse. Previously, he published Teen Surf Goth with Metatron Press. Why wait for the interview? Let's get to the interview as soon as possible. Thank you for listening.
A lot of my friends are saying they just want to write things for their friends, which I can relate to. Yes, I want to speak to my friends in a secret voice, a language outside language, straight from the void slash womb we all relate to. But what about trying to bring the face of God, demonic tearing its way back through the fabric of reality, tear down the scaffold, unveil the ugly parts too? You know, I feel I haven't felt a real feeling in years. I'm trying to get at something so obvious, yet out of my reach, but my best thoughts I forget immediately. Flaming trash heap of my mind. Time to face the facts. Organic nut butters suck. Sometimes expensive things are just worse, and that's that. I guess what is key is to always remember there is an island of hopes and dreams, where the clouds look like pictures of clouds on bright days, where the coconuts taste like how you'd want them to, where death is on pause, where strangers hold hands and smile, where they lounge and bathe, a fortress of frolicking.
We go into your past, your life growing up in Paris. Didn't you grow up in like the 16th, like arrondissement?
No, I grew up in the 17th.
Oh.
Which is different, but nearby. It's a bit more diverse, socioeconomically, I guess, than the 16th. The 16th is more like a conservative calf trad. And the 17th has different groups of people. Somewhat, they've got a bit of like a nouveau riche feel, bourgeoisie, in one part, and then there's like a sort of like a bourgeois bohemian area that's now quite like yuppified or sort of like trendy. Was like a more like working class area. It's still like a little bit, but not really up north, closer to the north, because then you get closer to the 18th, which is historically has. Neighborhoods like La Goutte d'Or and stuff that are like traditionally rough, thought to have been rough, like where all the drugs were.
Do you think this is where your love of poetry is shaped from?
What do you mean?
From where you grew up? The parts of Paris culturally influence you into like specific art forms in the specific regions of Paris?
No.
No?
No, no. I don't feel very romantic about Paris. I feel pretty, I don't want to say anything bad. I have mixed feelings about Paris. Sure, I have, I mean, maybe like some of it, I guess, like, yeah, I mean, there's like a vibe or something. But like I didn't get into poetry from school. Like that, I was like a science kid.
Really?
It doesn't really make sense, but like I was thought, you know, I thought I was supposed to be like good at math and stuff for like until I was like, not very old, but that was like that's what people thought from. So, you know, like in France, you have like when you turn 15, you have to choose whether you're gonna, it's like a bunch of things, but if you do go into like, if you plan to go into like higher education stuff, You have to choose whether you're going to have a literature background or literature focus studies, like social economic studies or science studies. And no, I said I wanted to do, I like was not, wasn't my, it didn't necessarily make sense for me to do literature. And then I like sort of had a change of heart. And then that's like what I went towards. And I don't really know why. I mean, I would say that I found poetry kind of like independently of school and of, I don't know. Like I read, you know, like I read Rambo when I was like probably like 15. And it wasn't assigned to me in school. It was something that I found online somehow. I don't really know how. And I think that made me like it much more. People do study it in school. And I think if I had done that, I might not have liked it as much. You know, I don't know why, I don't know how I found it really even. But I remember reading about that and becoming obsessed. So it's, it definitely felt like private to me rather than like something about like French cultural institutions or something, if that makes sense.
So you grew up on the internet and you used the internet to access poetry?
I guess so.
Okay.
Sure. I don't know.
Did you have a LiveJournal?
I did not. I didn't know about LiveJournal.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know. I was never. So I said this. We just did this Toronto event the other day. And it was like a Q&A, in conversation type of event, which we had never done. So that was kind of a little scary. But fun. And someone asked me like, cause you know, obviously Kristen, the other Chevy Dahl author on this, this round has, had a live journal, wrote about, a novel about live journal, or partially about it. And I did not, I was on a forum called extrememetal.com. And I was a moderator for the philosophy and goth sections of that. And that was my big thing that I was into when I was like 14, 15. And that doesn't exist anymore. It has been completely wiped off the surface of the internet. You might be able to access it through Time Machine. I doubt it. I've tried to find like, cause I wrote a bunch of stuff on there, like poetry stuff and, you know, about that, about, or just general angsty stuff. And I was like kind of bummed that I couldn't find it anymore. I wrote like 1500 posts or something.
You can go on like the Wayback Machine and
yeah, maybe I should try, but then like it'd probably be embarrassing. And then I was on this other thing and I don't even remember what it was called anymore. It was like a Euro like sort of live journal type thing. It had a very elaborate like profile page, and I remember I put a ton of work into it. Probably just sounded stupid, but I don't remember what it's called either. So,
So what did like Rimbaud like? How did he like speak to you? Like, what did you love about Rimbaud?
He was like just really punk. I really loved that. I say that like, oh right. So like when I decided to go the lit way, my French teacher, the way that you have an English teacher, you know, like my main, like homeroom teacher, essentially, was surprised. She was like, "Oh, really? That's what you want to do?" I was like, "Yeah, why not?" do I seem not artistic? I don't know. I guess it's also like less respected or something to do that. It's kind of like what the bums do. But what about, I don't know. So like we definitely did like Baudelaire. I like that. I mean, he's cool. But more like the verse is more classical, you know, a lot of traditional French poetry is written in what's called alexandrines, which are 12 syllable lines. And so it's very, very structured. Whereas Rimbaud is a bit more chaotic and like early free verse kind of guy. With some of it, not even, he wasn't even free verse yet. He was like pre-free verse for the most part. But yeah, I don't know, something about, it's very like adolescent love. Have you read any of that stuff before?
Like A Season in Hell.
Yeah. It's very like teen angry punk thing. It has an energy that, you know, it's like, who said that it like brought literature back to life or made it feel alive? It's something like that. Like it felt very like, it's rolling in the moment. And I'm not saying, like, there's other poetry out there, but that's definitely what, like, lit the fire for me. I don't think a lot of people will say that. It's not like an original thing.
Was your first book inspired by Rimbaud?
No, not, I mean, sure. In so far as, like, anything I do probably is always going to be in some to some degree indebted to that feeling at least. But no. I did. I mean, I was pretty obsessed with A Season in Hell for a while. I tried to translate it multiple times.
Really?
Yeah. And then I lost. I did the handwritten translations, and I kept losing them. So then I'd start again. I did this for quite some time, and then I tried to make it like an independent study project in school. They were like, "Why? Like, there's already so many translations. Like, what you have to like, you have to have a reason to do this." And I was like, "I don't have a reason. I'm just like obsessed with it." So that I sort of like that toned down after a while, but definitely until I was like 18, 19, that was like a major obsession of mine.
If you could hang out with Rimbaud, what would you do with him?
I don't. Oh no, I would. I couldn't do that.
Why not?
I feel like he was a prick.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like arrogant. You know, like mm-hmm. like I, you know, he did a lot of like. He was just like 16 and like standing on bar tables and pissing on people. I don't know if he actually did that, but you know, there's just stuff that he's like. He was obviously like arrogant and like kind of hot, basically, and Berlin had a crush on him, and that's why he's famous. Like, and he, I mean, he's like amazing. Like, but like. But I'm sure he was a pain in the ass to hang out with. You know, I'm sure if like if someone, an equivalent in a like poetry circle today would like probably annoy me almost certainly. So I'm a lot older than that now, you know? I don't, but you know, I might have like a resentful crush on him, but that would be about it.
Would you ever like teach him?
Teach him what? What
not teach him, but like teach. Oh, like teach his him. Words to, like,
oh, people. Well, I'm not a teacher. So.
Well, not yet. You could be.
I have no plans to do that. Although I heard that there's some great money to be made in being a traveling university poet. So maybe I should. But it's like, why me and not somebody else? You know, I should probably do some more modern things.
Lucy making a lot of money with her workshops? You do something like that?
I don't know if she's making that much money, but those are doing pretty well. They're...
So you said you had to like there was like this form in France of poetry. Did they make you write in that form of like 15 some syllables?
12. Oh. No. I don't think it's like a iambic pentameter is in English or something, mm-hmm. you know, or like, what's the other one? Like a sonnet or something, you know, it's like, just like a traditional form that like, it's not, I mean, they probably have sonnets too. I don't even remember. We must have actually, yeah, I do remember writing a sonnet now. And it was probably, it must've been in Alexandrins, I guess. I think in general there might be like less creative writing exercises as a rule. They don't encourage that as much. Or it's just like keep that shit to yourself. but yeah, I guess we probably did a few now and again.
So why not do a long form one of those? Like a long book.
Oh no, it feels way too traditional to mm-hmm. me. I also don't write in French. I haven't written in French since I was I don't know, after high school, probably, or as soon as I started to feel that I was writing things that were publishable, or when I started to feel that I was writing things that were communicating with other people, which I think is where writing begins. Rather than this kind of like internal sort of like not logorrhea, but like internal solipsistic monologue stuff that I've written a lot of that in French. But the stuff that felt like a dialogue with other people that felt like I was aware of the modern age, was all in English. I don't really know. I would like to switch back to French or to try French again, but I'm kind of scared. Like I don't have my level is high school level still, you know, cause I grew up there. It was my native language, but like I didn't pursue a university degree there. So I don't have like my French never developed as much as my English, and I don't. So and I also don't feel that I have like the same sort of social connective tissue with it that I'm able to communicate with French people as well, and also with like I'm not plugged in that same way. And also just like linguistically, I'd be a bit scared. Maybe that's a reason to do it though. Like there's lots of people, you know, I know like Beckett wrote Godot in French, right? And that was like a way to like pare down the floweriness of his language. Although I feel like I did the reverse. I feel like I wrote in a very flowery style in French. Like I would like make up words and stuff that were just like very, I wrote in this very French romantic way. I had a high school teacher who gave me a book called Against the Grain by Huysmans, which is like the most, it was like one of the inspirations behind the picture Portrait of Dorian Gray. It's just like the most kind of effete, impossibly flowery book ever. It's a great book, but it's like it's ridiculous, like unreadable. But you couldn't publish it something like that today. So for me, English is definitely something where I was more like aware of the internet stuff. I don't know.
But aren't you a translator, and don't you like work with French language like every day?
I am. Yeah. So a lot of translation. Often people say that you're only supposed to translate one way. So you're supposed to translate into your native language, and you can translate. If you know enough languages, you can do it out of several languages. Often people stick to just one pair, but sometimes they'll do others. But it's quite rare to have someone who goes in both directions. So for years I didn't do that. I did take it up kind of more recently, essentially because someone like badgered me into doing it. It's going okay. You know, I think I can do it. It's like a little bit more difficult for me. I'm slower and I have to look things up more. But I do both ways. But I think that's unusual and not, kind of not recommended or something.
Do you think if you wrote in like French, you would be like would you like have a different style than like the island, or would it be the same?
I don't know. I think it would have to be different. For one thing, I've thought about translating myself, you know, like because like if we thought about doing events in Paris, and then I'm like, oh, I should you know, not just do this in English, that seems a bit rude. Like I might as well translate bits of it. And then I can't decide how I would go about it, you know? And the island has like a fake translator's note and stuff in it. So it's already like kind of weird that like there's this pretense that it was found in French, which is obviously fake. Cause that'd be like really hard to do, I think. But so, would it be different? I mean, it's like speaking to the mode of address for people feels different. You know, I feel like I feel like I come across wrong in France now.
Why?
You know, like as a poet, I mean, like as my like Instagram poetry, etc. persona that is Oscar d'Artois, like I don't think I tap into people's whatever collective sentiment in the same way that I think I maybe am sometimes able to do in English. I can't really say why that is. I think it's because I just like stopped living there at some point. And as an adult, I kind of live as like not as a ghost, but I'm not as engaged in life there as I was at a certain point. And it feels like I'd have to like reinvent myself entirely again to be like a French writer. And that might not be like forever, but for now, I feel like I just haven't quite. There's something that like doesn't connect. It's like a cultural difference mainly. It's not about like style. It's like something about the way that people are expected to do poetry and stuff. I think also there's like maybe a feeling, this is like maybe harsh, that writing like isn't allowed or something. Like not exactly, but like there's, you know, like in America, in the US, there's like and in Canada, and you know, in the Anglophone world in general, there's like a pretty exciting, you know, I mean, it's like had ups and downs and blown up several times, but a relatively exciting independent literature community. And I don't think you have that in France anymore. And maybe I'm just like totally tapped out of it and I just don't know what I'm talking about, but I think there's like individual writers that I'm aware of you know, but there's not like strong groups doing stuff. And I think part of that has to do with like a kind of alienation with the internet that they experience, where they kind of see it as like an American product basically and don't like it, or like feel alienated from its use anyway. Like a lot of my friends I see using, not then this may be changing, but I see the way that they use it is kind of more as like a tool, to like a necessary tool, like a necessary evil, you know, like something for like rent, subletting your room, or like sharing important information, but not as like something to be played with as much as Americans do. So there's that like relationship to the internet that's not there in the same way. And then I think there's like something like a sort of a weightiness of prior of you know, a century ago, Paris was like the world capital of culture. And a sense of that weight is on people still, I would say. And it manifests in ways that are like, I saw, you know, I found, this is weird to say, an old like high school friend on Facebook recently. Or so, I don't know, I like saw their profile or something. And I looked, and they had their most recent post was from some years ago. And it was someone posting on their wall about how like, you know, like how does one do art? You know, writing is obscene. And I felt like that was a very French sentiment, the idea that like to write is an obscene gesture, you know, as opposed to like, do you know what I mean? As opposed to something mm-hmm. exciting. And I think that's a feeling, and it's maybe not everywhere, but for that reason, I think I'm not, I have trouble relating.
How do you perceive yourself to be? You were talking about your, how people see you. Your persona. You were talking about this Oscar persona earlier.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I just mean. I don't know. I don't know how this. I think I'm like quite pop, maybe. You know, as a writer, I'm quite like fun, shiny, glittery. Not, you know, I'm dark. Maybe, but like not like there's a shiny side. There's a lot of candy there to like get you towards the darkness. And I think that's sort of like yeah. Poppiness or something is quite Anglophone, quite America.
You've been kind of out of the scene for a while, I feel like. You're kind of like the guy behind the dollhouse and you help Lucy do stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I guess I kind of I didn't drop out, I would say. I guess I lurked a bit. You know, this is like a funny thing. I don't really know what I think about this. I published a poetry book in 2015, and then I didn't publish anything until 2024. And in a way, I think like, you know, there's that like Fiona Apple thing of like, if I feel like putting something out there, I will, and great. And if not, it doesn't matter if I don't ever do anything again. And I wouldn't say I felt that way exactly, but kind of like, I didn't have anything. I haven't had any, nothing has come up that like, that mattered, that made it sense as a book to me. You know, that was like, this like a sort of, you know, it's not like the angel whispering to Rilke on the cliff top, the first words to Duino, but it's a bit like, you know, I found a form for something. I got excited about it. It became, by the first time I performed a small piece of it, which actually was probably a year after I started it. Or maybe it was a few months. I don't really remember. Anyway, by the time I performed it, I was like, I have a sense, this is a book. It's this, I can make this a book. You know, and that was a very strong and distinct sense. And I think it's important to like, trust your instincts a bit with that. Like I've had other like, yeah, I've done workshops here and there, and I've had beginnings of projects, but I've never had this like, didn't write itself, but it pulled me forward, you know, and I had all this stuff from like years of accumulation of stuff that like was just like going right into it. And I think maybe that's something, I don't, maybe it's not true for all writers. For me, there's definitely, for poetry, like I need to have something to say, you know, and it has to be kind of like I tend to have things to say, but I have to like be unable to stop myself from saying it or something. You know, it has to be like overflowing. And that's how I felt with this book. And I had written another, I guess the other thing is that when I wrote Teen Surf Goth, which was, you know, I mean, it's a bunch of poems collected from like, I don't know, 2013 to 2015, probably. Around a similar time, I started this other book of fiction or nonfiction, whatever, prose, called Ramen, that was my first attempt at writing prose, for one thing, which is hard in a very different way. And I had a really hard time finding someone for it. And I think, you know, I shopped it around a bunch and then I got kind of depressed about it. I think that happens to a lot of people, you know, like trying to, like, you put out a first book and everyone's like, oh, how exciting. And then you sort of get stuck in like trying to figure out what the next thing is. And this, you know, again, I had a sense, to be honest, Lucy encouraged me quite a bit with that, with Ramen. She was like, oh, you should definitely write into this. And I was like, oh, really? And you know, I got some good feedback on it. Like I had a bunch of people, you know, I had one, I can't say his name, like, you know, don't want him to sue my ass, but a relatively well-known guy in the indie publishing who was like, oh yeah, this should definitely be published, but like not by me. I don't want my mom reading it, kind of thing. So I had a sense that it was like too, that people didn't want to touch it, I guess, because it was too, not, I don't know. Obscene is the wrong word. Just like, you know, that it was explicit, I guess, in some way or something. And then I also think I wasn't maybe ready to deal with it being published. Like I had people offer, you know, like I had it like I had an excerpt from it, longlisted for like the Cosmonauts AF prize or something, and they were going to publish it or publish that excerpt, which is the beginning of the book, and it's a significant chunk of the book, and I ended up being like kind of backing down on it for different reasons. So maybe I also like didn't want, I mean, that which is for a variety of reasons, but include, I think part of it was in retrospect, like I didn't want it out there, especially if I didn't have some kind of guarantee that it was going to be published afterwards. So that kind of got me a feeling like I was stuck in the mud for a while. You know, I kind of stopped submitting it after a couple years because it's just depressing. But again, I have like loads of friends who are like in that situation. It kind of sucks. I mean, it's like, oh, you should really, it's definitely like people should be starting their own presses thing, you know, because also it was like I was living in France or in Germany and like I was kind of out of that loop and people didn't really have a reason to publish me because they didn't know who I was, you know, they didn't have like a sense of connection to me necessarily. So that's anyway, so that, yeah, that left me kind of not sure where to go, and if I was like interested in literature in the same way anymore. And then I got kind of really obsessed with yoga for a while and like thought I might sort of change and take that as my like creative practice or something. And then I got too annoyed with it and thought it was stupid.
Really?
And so I think it's great. I still do it all the time, but it's not as satisfying to me as a creative outlet. It's not really a creative outlet.
You're not as into it as you were?
No.
Oh.
I wouldn't say so. I think I also got kind of like COVID wrapped up in it. You know, I was like, I need an obsession. I'm a very obsessive person. Like I have this kind of like, I get really into things and then that's all I care about for like a year, 2 years, you know? And that was fine. I'm kind of happy that, I mean, am I happy? I don't know. It's just life, but it's like interesting to me. I like to write more, you know, I wrote a bit about it in this book, but I'm interested in it as a subject matter. I'd be interested in like writing some sort of weird memoir eventually about it. I was gonna like go to India and then like do some stuff and enter this program and write about it, but they didn't let me in, which is why I complained about that in this book. And so maybe someday I'll do that, or maybe I'll write about how I never got in, or I don't know. Something like that.
There's very real aspects of your life in the book.
In here, yeah.
Yeah, on the island.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, you know, some people, they don't really write about their lives, I guess. I definitely... yeah, it's like what it like. You know, there's this idea. What do you think about this? I read this book actually called Yoga by this guy. What's his name? So he like had a mental breakdown and like did a lot of yoga and then. It still had a mental breakdown regardless. And it's unclear what the reasons are. Like part of it is maybe that he gets he's a French writer, has a bunch of friends killed in the Charlie Hebdo shooting. And then another thing is it seems he got divorced, but he can't. But I think the gossip about the book was that his wife told him that he couldn't write about her in the book. So he had a book about his divorce. And about his mental breakdown, and about all of the yoga that he did, and about the Charlie Hebdo shootings, 2015. And then his wife said, "You can't write about this because it's my story or whatever." And so he had to take it out. And you have this really silly passage in the middle of the book where he's just like, because it's never clear like what the problem is in the book. You know, he's like very upset, very depressed the whole time, but you're like, why, what's wrong? And then there's a passage in the book where he's like, I've always thought that literature is the place where you can't lie and where you have to be honest about stuff. And, but in this particular instance, what if one couldn't or something? Basically it's for legally, he's saying like it's like an explanation for like why half the book is missing, but he's very like doesn't really explain what he's quite like obscure about it. But anyway, I guess I feel that about the you can't like in a way you can do whatever the fuck you want in literature, right? Like you can make shit up. Making shit up is great, including in poetry. Everybody should make stuff up all the time. Absolutely pro lying. However, there's a sense of like. I think you have to be honest with yourself or something. Or for me, that's something that spurs me forward. It's like a sense of like, I need to assess where I am at in my life or something. And that creates a book. And that's I suppose that maybe that has like a sort of confessionalism to it aspect, but that's just a key part of the literary impulse for me. You know, I don't know. Sorry if it's corny.
So when you write poetry, you're not like creating speakers and like characters. You're speaking from yourself.
I wouldn't say that either. Okay. I'm like, it's not. I mean, I don't know. I don't really like the word the speaker. But whoever's talking in the island is certainly like it's not me, but it's definitely an exaggeration of me. Or like, I don't speak in haiku, you know, it's like a high pitched, like I found this haiku thing that like allowed me to speak in this high pitch of intensity and go to a certain place in my mind that I thought was interesting and that I wanted to write into because I felt that I needed to, essentially. But that said, like there's three voices really in the island. There's the prologue, there's the poem itself, and there's the fake translator's note at the end. And we thought that it was important to kind of what's the word? Bookend. Bookend the poem itself, because it was initially a performance piece and it works. It's sort of better I did it over music and like it has this kind of like emotive quality and like intensity to it that like I think works pretty well on the stage, and I definitely have this failed acting career or something, like
really
not acting career, but like a sense of like the bard as like someone who's performs, like liveness is important to me, I would say, and so like that sense and the sense of like something happening in the moment of reading a poem to an audience, you know, I really like that's Like I feel that it's that it's very that there's a theatricality to the moment of reading the poem that I'm interested in, and I don't know if a lot of other people are interested in it in the same way. And part of this, another French guy who was a big deal for me, and who I wrote my college thesis on is Arto, Antoine Arto, who I wrote my thesis on. I just said that. And he had, you know, he had this idea of like the theater of cruelty, and it's about sort of like, I don't really want to explain it too much, but like, you know, sort of like bringing about some kind of invisible metaphysical reality and like making it seen and felt to an audience. And I vibe with that, I have to say. So anyway, so there was that part of the poem, but then that felt too intense to read. You know, it was like too much, too loud, too sudden. And so it felt like we had to kind of like, there had to be, you know, like a, you know, like if you're like a plane, it had to be like a takeoff and a landing that were like softer. And so we put in this prologue that was like, I call it the Lonely Planet prologue. And I don't know if that's quite accurate, but essentially like I wanted it to be in this sort of like more kind of like travel blog voice, you know, that's like kind of more like, here are some interesting things you can see if you go to this part of Spain, kind of thing. And then the translator's note, similarly, like I think it helped to give some to flesh out the poem a little bit by taking some distance from it, by having this kind of like messy translator who's like losing the poem and getting wasted and passing out and letting the manuscript be devoured by ants and stuff.
Why is the book dedicated to, who's Jordan DeBar?
Jordan DeBoer is a very good friend of mine. He was a good friend of mine in college, and especially after college. We lived together in Northampton for a long time. We kind of egged each other on to Northampton in Massachusetts, Western Mass, where we both went to school. We were both like indie poetry boys, you know. He's also Australian, so we had a sense of a shared sense, I would say, of kind of foreignness in America that was, but there was also like, I don't know, like we were, like my family's American, his mom's from Pittsburgh, like we had the sense of like being also from here in a kind of distanced way, or just the sense of like being similarly kind of international, but also like passing as, you know, regular white people in America. And so there was that, and then I don't know, we had this sense that we were getting kind of like stuck in our college town in like 2012, I would say, and that we weren't just like never going to make it out of there, and we kind of like pushed each other to move to New York together, and that was felt, I mean, it's probably not that big a deal, but at the time it was like kind of hard, seemed hard to do. And then we both kind of discovered this library of Mellow Pages around the same time, and went and hung out there a bunch, and we're just kind of like sad indie boys there together. And that's it. Read some poetry stuff at the time, and then he sort of like got busy with work stuff. Yeah, he's always just been a really good friend of mine, and he's very supportive. And I don't know, he had some health issues recently, some health scares, I guess. Uh-oh. And I felt very, I don't know how much I should talk about that, but it made me frightened and more, you know, aware of the preciousness of life or whatever the fuck, and also want to feel bad that I wasn't seeing my friends more a lot in the US, and like that I needed to go back and sort of be a better friend in person, because I'm often fucking off to the ends of the earth and not talking to anybody for months. So that, and also it's made him very kind of gung-ho and positive and like excited about life, and like kind of like very like wanting to say yes to everything kind of vibe, and which I has made me very happy to see in some ways. So that was why.
It feels like you just explained like the arc of the book.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
it does feature in the book. It's not like the whole thing, but it is, it's there. Yeah.
Well, because in the early part of The Island, you talk about wanting to feel a feeling you haven't felt in a long time. And then throughout the arc and through the end of the book, you do feel a feeling, but you do it through like seeing your friends sort of judge other people. And then you see like their deficits, but you see it, you realize you see it through yourself or something, and then you feel something. And then you really like you're just like nice to your friends or something. Like there's a friend that you meet at the end who like you have like you wish a long life and you wish they fulfill all their wishes and dreams and stuff. No.
That's I would say the Jordan page. Which is about wanting to him to live a great, happy, long life. Kind of like, so he came over to visit me in Spain, and I was just like, it was very exciting. And you know, we served together, and I felt, yeah, this kind of, you know, because we're all like getting older and stuff, and it's like, oh, you know, yeah. you want your friends to get everything they want out of their lives. Mm-hmm.
So there's not a narrative arc.
There's a narrative arc, but there's like a bunch. It's not like a single thing. No, but that's a good reading. That's an interesting reading. Anyway, there's definitely a sense of like, you know, I haven't really considered that. I don't think of it that way, but there's definitely like an attempt to move away from isolation and alienation, probably.
Well, because at the beginning of the book, it seems like the speaker wants to be isolated and wants to be separate from their friends. And then at the end, they're kind of coming back to their friends and wishing them like happier lives and stuff. And like living in the moment, stuff like that. Like they've learned something over the course of the poem.
Hopefully. It's hard to like, yeah. I don't know, pigeonhole it like that, but I
don't want to pigeon. I mean, there's so many things.
Oh, sorry, that's the wrong word. Yeah, it's just like there is a, yeah, there's definitely a sense of like, but you know, it's like this is my, like, I just live an isolated life, so like I've chosen that, you know, but yeah, it's more like an yeah, like there's definitely a sense of like, life is with people. In the book, you know, that it doesn't make sense, just like totally in a void, for sure. But also, I think that a lot of that is to do is COVID, basically, is like having sense of like, oh, you know, we're also like pretty alone for a while, and then it was like, oh shit, like suddenly everybody's like a lot older than they were before, and they like it's this like. Bunch of life feels like it vanished, and it's like, oh, we've got to like, I don't know, maybe not especially, but you know, when suddenly, you know, I just kind of turned 30 or 31, and then suddenly I was like, oh, I'm in my mid-30s, and like, what, my life is slipping away from me fast, and what am I doing with that kind of thing, and that so I think that informed the like thing about haven't felt a real feeling in years. I think that a lot of that was just like the craziness of being, you know, like extra isolated. I already choose to be isolated, but I was extra isolated by that. And I think everybody was.
I was so thrown off by the prologue because I wasn't expecting that at all.
Sure. Why, why were you thrown off? Yeah, it's kind of weird, I guess. Why did you feel thrown off?
Because you're expecting this book to be a long haiku and be like, I guess like silly and kind of your poetry, but then you're starting it off with like this explanation of like this, some like very specific place, a very real place. I just wasn't expecting that at all. And like the history of these places and the economics situations. I was like, where is this going?
Yeah. Why are we talking about this? I don't know. Yeah, it was kind of like, I guess that's like false advertising, isn't it? I'm like, oh, it's a haiku. And then you're just like, what is this?
Did you want to subvert people's expectations of what the book was like going to be about?
It's more like what I said before about like the beginning of the poem feels like it really comes at you, you know, felt too intense to just like you open that and it just sort of slaps you in the face right away. And so I wanted to put something in that was like a bit more similar. Like it's not, you know, it's just like, I mean, similarly like mythologizing of landscapes of a certain kind, of a certain like beachy place, you know, but just in it from a different kind of more objective, more distanced point of view. And I thought that was, would just let people in better, but it does, I think, feel probably a bit misleading at the beginning. You're just like, what the heck is this? A lot of it is made up, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for example, excuse me while I find my own quotes, but like there's this idea, you know, first of all, the idea that it's like the historical home of the monster Geryon, like that's not, I have no evidence of that. It could be, you know, or the idea that the city of Cadiz is actually, you know, corresponds to Hades. In Greek, you know, that seems highly unlikely to me. There's this thing about it, like, it says, like, if you follow the logic of the linguistic tick common in some Spanish dialects of allowing the voiced velar plosive g to lazily slide from the glottis down into the back of the throat and into the voiceless pharyngeal fricative h, you can infer corresponds to Hades. Like, that's not, first of all, I don't know anything about linguistics. I don't think I said those words right, even. I don't think that's true. Like I found some semi plausible things that like Galician does that thing, but Galician is from northern Spain, not from that part of Spain. So I don't know that that's a credible linguistic etymology necessarily. But for me, it was like I went to this place and I saw these red cliffs. And have you ever read Autobiography of Red?
I've read parts of it.
That's what that's kind of about referencing, mm-hmm. is, you know, and like, I guess the Greek myths themselves, but because the cliffs were stunningly red, and it's true that that part of the world is this, you know, was the end of the world for them. It is around there that Hercules went, that he split the Atlas Mountains. Like that's a local mythology that's real, where he found where Geryon was, like, it was supposed to be an island, right? So it doesn't really make sense that it would have been, these are what I'm talking about are actually, it's mainland Spain. So it doesn't quite, it's a bit of a fictional, whatever you want to call that, geography, Lonely Planet article, you know.
Can you speak to the epigraph?
The epigraph? Yeah. It's from a much longer quote. I wanted to quote a whole bunch of it. And I thought when it was just a haiku, that made sense, because I thought it was like kind of funny to have like a ridiculously long epigraph, like it was like two pages or something, and then you know, this quite short condensed poem. But then with the addition of the prologue and the translator's note, it seemed like basically Lucy was like, no one's gonna read that. It's too long. It's TLDR. So I cut it really short. I've wanted to use that for years. You know, I have for some reason with epigraphs, it's like I've got like a few I know that I want to use, you know, I just need to find the right book for them. And sometimes I'll put them all at the beginning of Ramen, I had like five, you know, then it's like, really, there's only one that makes sense in the end. And like this one was clearly the one for this. It's about, it's from Ferdy Dirk. I don't know how you're supposed to say that. It's a made-up word, so it probably doesn't really matter. Which is a book by this Polish writer, Gombrowicz, who was like, he's really cool. He's like a modernist, I guess you call it that, Polish writer who was, I guess, banned from or exiled, lived much of his life anyway in exile in Argentina. And because of during the Soviet Union didn't like his shit. And he's very, he's so weird. He's like, Friedrich is the, I really recommend it like as a read. It's just like, like I don't even, I can't explain it. It's just like, so the plot is like, it's like a 30-year-old guy for some reason like gets retold to go back to school and like becomes a kid again, and he like shrinks to kidness, and then like he has the there's this thing called the pupa, which is like a Polish word, I don't even really know what it means, and it's like the teacher keeps dealing him the pupa, and that like somehow like infantilizes him and makes him feel that he's a kid again, and then everyone starts behaving that he's like that, and it like it's this like it's a really interesting take or sort of look at like the way that, you know, how you act and feel has so much to do with like, is like created by the society around you and your impressions of yourself and all this. I don't know. Anyway, and that passage is about, so that he's got this, this friend called Nidus in the school, and Nidus goes around, Nidus and the other boys, pull faces at each other all the time. They make grimaces. That's like one of their games to like try and like horrify each other or something, you know, like whatever kids do, you know, a lot of like stuff. And so they're very, you know, nasty little boys. And then, but at some point, Nidus has like a softness that comes out, and they're like city boys, and he has this the narrator tries to make him stop making the faces because he's making these really horrible faces and he can't stand it anymore. And so he becomes aware of his like city schoolboy's longing to escape to the country or something, and to like the authenticity of farmhands, the farm life. And so he's like, what if we ran away from all this together? And then Nidus goes into, he like loses the sort of like face of the nasty face and goes into this like sing-songy humming, like, oh, would you like to really? Oh, to run away to the farmhands, to those boys who bathe by the river, who, you know, and this kind of very whimsical thing. And then the narrator hates that too. He's like, oh no, now he's gotten this like stupid romantic, like whimsical thing. And that he's like, well, at least it's better than the faces, but like, I don't. And then they get swept off into this, like they do run away to, and like, whatever. Anyway, I just really liked it as a, you know, it's like kind of, it's like indulging in a sort of like escapist fantasy of an authentic life out in the whatever wilderness or whatever, but also pokes fun at it, or thinks it's take, you know, takes the Mickey out of it, as they say. So
you feel like that, you think that parts of that show up in your, on the island too?
I think it's just like an awareness of it, of that sort of thing. That is, yeah, there's like a duality of that, of a consciousness about around that for sure. That is present in the island. Yeah.
There's a part where you were talking about your friends getting married, getting divorced, and then you're like, cookies for breakfast. Fuck it. Emo tornado. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're almost constricting your own like expectations of what adulthood is supposed to be like. And so you're gonna have cookies for breakfast, which is like you're choosing what to eat for breakfast, this very independent thing. That's what kids kind of want. And I think that's what teen surf goth even felt like this finding, this trying to find yourself and trying to gain a sense of independence. And now here you're kind of like regressing back to that state almost because of this expectations that you've set on what adulthood is supposed to be like. And maybe you're not meeting these things that you think you're supposed to.
I don't feel like I don't feel very grown up, you know. I have been married for a long time, but we did that in a very almost childish maybe way. Like we were, as you know, 25, it was just like eloped to Denmark kind of thing. And you know, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not an adult. I just like that yeah, I don't know. It's just always weird watching people around you like evolve into what they think seem to have planned their life was going to be like, you know, or suddenly find that they want their life to be like.
Do you feel like though when those things happen, you see your friends go through those changes that you have to then change in some instance?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it feels like, oh, what am I? What stage am I at? You know, should I be, you know, having babies? Should I be like moved by, you know, getting a real house and more of a real job and all this stuff? And then I'm, you know, I mean, I think my well, you know, so in some ways, yeah, sure. Like we are, I think that's how we keep each other in remind ourselves each other of the stage in life that we're at. You know, and that's just how society functions. But in a way, I think it allows me like as well to reassess, like to be like, oh, I like the, you know, poetry thing could have seemed like childish at a certain point, and I feel like it's at this point I'm pretty in it, you know, or like it's like in doing this, I feel like I'm like I've like reasserted that for myself. I'm like, no, this I'm really doing this. It wasn't a kid's game or something. And so that feels, yeah, childish, but also, and maybe selfish and whatever else, but also like exciting that it's possible as an adult to make those kinds of decisions. You can have cookies, you can take poetry seriously. It's fine.
Is that why you kind of chose like the haiku? Because the way that you use the haiku in the long form, it's like you would use like kind of two lines that correlate to each other. And then the third one would be kind of a step towards another direction.
Yeah. It's interesting. With poetry in general, often you like want to insert an element of surprise, and it felt like that was like a way to like keep it moving. Was yeah, to change. But I, you know, it's also the poem is partially like collaged from different haikus, so it's also like that sense of surprise is also recreated probably by that. And then, yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, you start on a thought and then it gets boring, or you're like, oh, we get this, or you think, I don't want to go. You get tired of going that direction. And so I think, yeah, you want to keep yourself excited, you know, so it just has to move in another direction. And that was, so, you know, the structure is of the poem is like, is not a strict like 5-7-5, 5-7-5 haiku. It goes 5-7-5, 7-5-7-5. So it falls over itself. So part of that element of it that provided more of a sense of like a waterfall motion or something that like propelled itself forward. And that's like something that excited me about writing it as well. It's like, oh, this, or what made it feel like, oh, this is pulling me along. And definitely inserting that element of like, sort of like, oh, I'm tired of whatever it is I was thinking about. I'm going to like take this somewhere else, something.
Do you think on the front of the book, there's the illustration with a guy and like there's ladders that lead up to like a cloud. Is the haiku form like, in a sense, a ladder to you and like you're moving up, but then sometimes it doesn't really go anywhere? I don't know.
I don't know how to answer that. So my friend Mad does these. She's really cool. She used to be I met her when we were six in first grade, and she went on to be she was a toilet seat painter. She would paint toilet seats and then guerrilla install them in bars in Brooklyn. Like she would like go in, take out the toilet seat, and put in her like painted one. And I don't know if she's. There's any of those that still exist, but I think that's kind of cool. And then she's moved into like sort of selling them to people, and then she became a tattoo artist, and it has this very like distinct kind of gangly long line drawing style. And it just felt like that was a really good fit with the haiku, which is, yeah, like a ladder style. Like it's looks, it's very skinny, you know, so they just sort of like match each other. I think I mentioned ladders, that I liked her ladders, but it wasn't like because it's a symbol of what the haiku does or takes you. I mean, yes, I think like the, you know, poetry is a motion towards the impossible or towards like an attempt, like a, it's like a momentum towards realized being that is not really realizable. So there's this way that it like carries you towards something and then that just vanishes and then it has to go back down and go back up. So, or at least that's what I feel like I'm, you know, you're moving into like different visions of the world or something. So yeah, maybe there's like a sense of like ups and downs and things not going, and that's like the island itself as well as like a kind of like as a fantasy object, you know, it like, I don't know. It's always like moving away and seeming like a realizable thing and then not and stuff. And so that's, yeah, I guess that feels like a big part of the impetus.
Can you talk about the aspects of like religion in this book? There's a lot of writing about like demonic shit, like tearing up your body, and then like one of the end lines is like take me to hell.
Yes, take me to hell. Yeah, I wanted it to be like a bit of a like a Satanist manifesto, you know. But I'm not like a serious, yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not like a real Satanist, but like, I just, I mean, there are different things going on there. There's like, what about trying to bring the face of God demonic tearing its way back through the fabric of reality? That's kind of about like this, this Artaud theater of cruelty stuff. You know, that's like more like instead of like, you know, that line, it's like about like trying to like be honest with your friends. But then there's also a sense of like, what about poetry as like an idea of like bringing invisible worlds back into the present and kind of like also like an ambition to like not to destroy reality, but to like to reawaken conscious like an awareness of the world that's fallen away or something. Which I feel like is not, people don't talk about that in poetry as much these days. Like it's not as, not trending so much. The idea of like the poem is like this, like, yeah. Bringing about of invisible realities. I don't know how else to describe it. Then there's also I was big into like Paradise Lost for a while. Did you ever read His Dark Materials, the Philip Pullman trilogy?
Mm-mm.
Really? It's great.
Should I?
No, you're probably too old now. It's like great for a teen. It's based loosely on, it's a sort of a rewriting of Paradise Lost, but so Paradise Lost is like, it's written from the perspective that's not true, but there's a lot of Satan in it. And Satan is kind of often viewed as like, he's like, it's like, there's a thing in it where he's like, I will, you know, I'm writing this poem to justify the ways of God kind of thing, you know? Cause like God, you know, why does God create suffering and pain if he's a benevolent God? You know, the problem of evil is, that's like sort of what it's dealing with from the get-go. And then, but then it also frames the character of Satan as a kind of one of the early like prototypes of the romantic hero, you know, this like figure of I don't know, like a fucked up tragic guy, whatever it is. And then you get this, there's like potential readings of Paradise Lost as like viewing okay, this is a little ridiculous that I'm gonna start on this, but I'm doing it. So how it starts, like the war, the reason that Satan gets sent to hell, right? In Milton, it's like, and I mean, maybe in general, he wages a war against God, right? And why does he start a war? Like he's an archangel. He's like, everyone's happy. There's no humans. It's just like, everything's great in heaven. There's no problems. But then God creates the sun, and the sun is a S-O-N, is above the other archangels. We're all, you know, it's like Michael and Raphael and all these like guys who are all, you know, or whatever their gender is, happy in heaven together, hanging out, doing all, they all have their various functions. Everything's great. Then it creates the sun, and Satan's like, what's with the second in command? Like, what is that? Why are you like making us lower than others? And then he starts this, revolution essentially against this like this like seemingly like irrational decision that like creates suffering for the angels because it wounds their pride or something. So this is why the sin of pride is Satan's sin, right? Because he rises up because he's been demoted in his job, basically. And then there's this big war between the archangels and Michael, who is like God's warrior angel. You know, he's got like, they have, you know, like Gabriel's like sings songs and stuff, and I forget what Raphael does, hangs out with Adam and Eve and is nice to them or something. But Michael's the one with the sword. It's got like a flaming sword, and he just chases everyone away. So he banishes Satan to hell. And the idea of hell, the definition of hell is just that it's a place without God's presence, where you can't feel God's presence. And then you have this sense of it's a pandemonium, which is the city of demons that Satan is the head of, you know, and where they're all banished and they're all, and it's like, at first it looks like it's going to be great. It's like, we don't need this like bossy God and stuff to create these authorities. We can have this like little anarcho demon society down here, you know, which I feel like is very relevant. Like it's very like in keeping with like ideas of, I don't know, imagined communities, you know, where we imagine the hierarchy free queer interracial, you know, the imagined community. But they can't. But Satan gets upset, basically. He's like, we're all hanging out here, it's great. But they can't feel God, and that creates like an unhappiness with him. But the only reason that he feels okay. I don't really remember all this exactly, but at some point God also creates humans. And I think the sun is part of creating humans. It's like, I want to make this these other people. I don't remember what it is. Something about the existence of humans, I feel, makes it irresistible for Satan to like go back, to like leave. He's like, he becomes aware that he becomes aware of the absence of God, but only because of God's creation of humans. And so then he has to go and like pervert them and stuff. There's like a logical element that I'm missing there. Sorry. But that essentially that. And so I guess I don't know. I'm like, I'm quite, the Pullman book is a rewriting kind of more in this sense of like, because in Milton, it's unclear, you know, it's like, he says he's like pro God, but it like kind of feels like you're not sure. And so the Pullman version is kind of like the other way around. It's like anti-authority, anti the church is this like big established thing. And essentially, I mean, I don't know if it's Satanist, but like it has something like this, like pro the uprising sentiment to it. Yeah, and I guess that was something that that's always sort of fascinated me, or ever since reading it. I don't know, something I was thinking through in the poem.
So what is your ideal version of hell, and why do you want to be there? And are you a demon? Do you see yourself as
one? No, I wouldn't go. Sure, maybe. Yeah, am I a demon? Interesting question. No, probably not really. I don't, it's hard to take the idea of hell that seriously, really. Like, it's fun in theory, but I don't see myself as a demon. maybe partially, you know, like everyone, but yeah. I mean, but I think it's interesting the idea that hell fails as like a revolutionary society or something, you know, that I think that's like, why does he feel, that he needs to bask in this greater presence kind of thing.
So you think LGBT communities are like those?
I don't know. Sure, a bit, yeah, you know, there's a sense of like, oh, we're opening up the world to like, you know, I think queerness is a, yeah, I think it's a perversion, but I mean in like the best sense, like,
how so?
Of people who've said no to their desires, it sort of turns that on its head, and that potential within queerness is like constant, and that's how it is threatening to a certain kind of society, and remains so. I think so in that sense, yeah, there's something demonic, I guess, about it, but again in like in the best way.
How have their readings been going?
They're all very different events, like you get different crowds and vibes and stuff, but overall people have been pretty like receptive to the poem, for one thing, which I was a bit nervous about. It's kind of intense. That's been nice. Hopefully that translates to people actually reading it and enjoying it. I don't know. We'll see.
There was a line that kept coming up. It said like, I see the architecture.
There is an architecture. Yeah, there's a few lines like that. Part of it was I wanted these leitmotifs in. And then there was also a problem of honestly convenience. I would realize that I had accidentally done like 5-7-5-5-7-5-7-5-5, you know, so, or like 2 7s or 2 2 5s on top of each other. I would need to break them up with another line. So I was able to, I like had a few that I could like pick and choose from to insert them in different parts of the poem, because I wanted to keep the structure. I didn't want to like, it felt like important to like stick with it, commit to the bit once I had started on it.
How do you know when a poem is undone?
How do I know when a poem is done? I'm really bad at that. I have no idea. With this, it was really good, because it was like Lucy was like gonna publish Kristen's book, and then it was like I had a draft of this, and it was like, okay, now we need to make this into a publishable book, you know, because I had essentially what was a performance piece that was quite long but needed to be reworked somewhat or worked into a publishable thing. And so I had a limited time frame, and I'm pretty good at, I'm kind of terrible at writing books that I want. This is kind of related to my like sense of like poetry as performance. I think like I feel with a deadline, I feel that I can bring something into the world, you know, and if I don't have a purpose for it, it's quite hard for me to like be like, okay, I'm going to take, especially with a poem, which is so like the, like it's got so many topics and goes so many direct, you know, it's like, so essentially I had to finish it, and I did, and it was hard for me, you know, even in the translator's note, there's like extra haikus that I like, just because I had all loads of other material that I kind of like wanted to put in, and then I was like, oh, maybe, and like essentially Lucy had to be like, no, that's, look, we're not editing the poem anymore. That's it. And so then I like slipped a few in the translator's note and stuff. But at some point, I think at some point, I started like, it did a, like, I restructured it a bunch. I used to have like lots of asterisks in it as to break it up more. And then it became this sort of like seamless thing afterwards. And then I was like, okay, I'm starting to have a sense of it as a unified thing. And then, and so, yeah, at some point it congealed into what was clearly a kind of finished product, but it's hard for me. I mean, it's still, yeah, I'm really like, micromanage-y with my, you know, it's hard for me not to want to like fidget with tiny stuff all the time. I love getting like obsessed with little details, forever and like forgetting about the bigger picture of it and just like really getting into the nitty gritty of it. So it can be hard for me to let go, but I love to be forced to. I love to invent deadlines for myself.
Why don't you send the extra haikus out to like magazines and like submit them to get published and then you can like promote the book through there?
I could. I think it sort of feel like they're not part of the book now. I've sort of like, you know, it's like this didn't make it. Like I had lots of stuff that just didn't. And sometimes I was like, I'm cutting this. I don't like it. Doesn't make sense. And sometimes I was like, I was harder to let go of. But I think you have to be quite like cruel with yourself with that stuff. It's like it doesn't belong. And, you know, it doesn't. And I have a sense of the thing as like being a closed system now, you know, and the other stuff, it's like maybe it can be reused later. Ultimately, you know, it's like really addictive form to write in. So I've got others since, you know, it's like kept going, like might do like The Island Part Two or, you know? Yeah. But no, I don't think I'm going to send out other. That's like, that's not the book. This is the book. The product. I felt like I had a vision for it, and like now it's become itself, and I don't want to touch it anymore. Kind of thing, you know.
Okay, well, thank you for coming on. It's been awesome.
Sure. Thanks for having me.